One other thing. So we were going to be going out of town this week. We're not anymore. But I'm still going down to Vancouver on Wednesday. So I won't be here on Wednesday. Ken's going to be teaching class on Wednesday. It's said in there about the leadership class on Tuesday being canceled because I'm going to be out of town. Probably, let's just nix that. Let's go ahead and have the class this week because I'm not going to be leaving till Wednesday. So ignore what you see in your bulletin about the men's leadership class being canceled. Never mind. It doesn't say that in there. It doesn't say that. Okay. I told that to the guys that were in there, but I guess I forgot to update Judy. Oh, no. I expected Tom to update Judy about that. That's what that was. Anyway, good thing he didn't, so just ignore me. But if you heard that, yeah. So I'll still be here, so we'll continue with class. All right, Genesis chapter 19. One thing I wanted to pick up on was, you know, when Abraham was asking God, will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? And I, you know, found that to be such an interesting conversation that Abraham had with God, almost, you know, being very bold, almost telling God what he should and shouldn't do. And one thing I kind of wanted to ask is, does God ever sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Okay. Give me an example. Does God sweep away the righteous with the wicked?
Well, we know the rain falls on the just and the unjust, and that's the good things happen.
Okay, but that's not the question.
Well,
that's sort of the opposite.
But both things, there might be some just people on there.
All right, let me narrow this down. When we're talking about God executing judgment, specifically, no, of course not. We're not talking about just the random things that happen on earth in life. Okay, but when you look at the examples of God's judgment throughout Scripture, you look at the flood. All right, it doesn't seem there was anyone left from reading that was righteous except for Noah. That judgment was just. You look at Sodom and Gomorrah. There was absolutely no one there except for Lot that was good. And what does God do? He saves Lot out of that. And you look at Israel coming in and conquering Canaan. And what? Or where? It doesn't seem like there was anyone worth saving. I mean, save from a few, Rahab comes to mind. But when there was someone that was worth saving, they are always saved. And I just think that that's a very important concept for us to understand about God, is that God never executes an unjust punishment. He never executes anything that is unjust. He always is going to do what's right. He is always going to save the righteous and is always going to punish the wicked in his judgment. And so that's a very key concept for us to understand. Yes, Sam?
Well, I agree with you, except there is one addendum to add. And that is, it doesn't mean that the righteous are negatively impacted.
Okay, sure.
In the case of Lot.
Yeah.
He lost everything, but he was saved.
Yeah, I mean, he got away with his life.
Yeah, and yeah. You could say, look, he knew, he took the chance, he knew what he was getting into when he decided to go move with it, especially. And so, you know, there's unfortunately the necessity to pay for one's bad decision.
Yeah, but again, the point is bringing us down to the final judgment. Yeah. That should tell us about the final judgment, that final judgment will be perfect. That we don't have, look, if we are counted amongst the righteous, that no one that should be saved is not going to be saved. Everyone that should be punished is going to be punished. God is the perfect judge.
So in other words, Lot's faith, as far as the ultimate faith, was not just dependent on Abraham.
Right. Okay, so we get into chapter 19, we look at this story, and we kind of got into it somewhat last week. But I wanted to look, point out a few specific things today because I didn't have my notes last week. One thing that was interesting about this is when they came to his door, and so, of course, we know Lot was out there. He's watching at the gate. He brings the angels into his house, you know, seemingly knowing that, doing that for the purpose of protecting them. And whenever the men of the city come to Lot, and they say, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them." And he says to them, "I beg you, do not act so wickedly." And then he proceeds to offer up his two virgin daughters to them. And they say in verse 9, "Stand back." And they said, "This fellow came to sojourn, and he has become the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." So number one, what do we think about Lot offering up his daughters? No, I don't like it. That's a good answer. What in the world was he thinking? I don't know. Almost like some commentators even think maybe it was a bluff, you know. But it didn't even matter because they didn't. They were so wicked that they didn't even want that. I mean, that this is
also the homosexuality of it. Most homosexuals do not, men do not want women.
That's the idea. Okay, Marian.
No, it was
turned down to women.
It's righteous because I don't know that I agree with Sam, because when Lot chose part of the valley that he wanted to go, the Bible doesn't say he knew what went on in the city. Does it? It doesn't say he knew there were homosexuals down there. He just did it because of the beauty of the land. So to me it was shown as righteous. Brought up with Abraham.
Bible
says he was righteous. So he was in a bad place.
Yeah, and that's something, I don't know. We'll come back to that. We're going to come back to that. Okay, Karen?
Well, I'm kind of with Marianna. I think that Lot had a real tough choice here. And he knew these people were from God. And he is desperately trying to please God. So, you know, the only thing he can think of, and, you know, this may be one of these momentary sort of things too, is the only thing he could think of was, I'm going to sacrifice something that is, you know, precious to me because
for whatever reason, in this moment, he thought that providing protection for these angelic visitors was more important than providing protection for his daughters. I don't know why that's what he thought. I don't know what was going on in his mind at the time, but that's the decision that he tried to make. That's the solution and in his desperation, that seems to be the only thing he could come up with. So, yeah. Okay.
I'm not too clear in my mind that at that moment he already knew they were angelic visitors for the purpose of...
Well, but, yeah. Well, whoever... I'm with you. I'm not sure he knew at that point either. But whoever they were, he was like, I need to protect these men. Because he knew what would happen to them.
Later on, it becomes codified Jewish practice and law. If there's someone, a sojourner or a visitor in your household, you are responsible for protecting their very life. By whatever means necessary. Perhaps this was in the beginning of that. I remember in Judges 19:20 and 21, with the situation of the tribe of Benjamin, tries to homosexually assault a priest of God, that old man who was trying to save him did the very same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't explain why it was they felt obligated to go that far. I believe that what they were trying to do was to provide the ultimate protection against those who were under their roof.
Yeah. Okay. Paul.
Maybe Lot don't know that these two were strangers. And to give your daughters instead of two strangers might be a big mistake made by Lot. I have five daughters, but Lot have a big mistake than keep his daughter. To have to shut the door and that's it. To this bad guy to keep your daughter who was virgin.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this was cowardly. In my mind, this is cowardly for him to offer up his daughters. Okay. Either one. Ladies first.
And it's just like what his uncle did when he was faced with, you know, the world, with the threat from the world. He would say, oh, see, you're my sister, not my wife. You know, it's the same personality traits.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly shows the same idea of I'm going to try and find my own way out of this, self-preservation, or in this case, preservation of others, and I'm going to, you know, do something not right in order to accomplish that instead of trusting God. And I think that's kind of T.L.'s point. So, yeah, Mike.
Yeah, I see the wearing down of God.
Yeah.
The choice that he made. This is a developed decision. A lot of times, man and I will say, well, we see a lot of our fellowship, our brotherhood and sisters, having to make the decision right because they made the wrong decision. And the pressure that that puts on a man or a woman, well after you know, righteous decision was made in the first place, to have to try to live in a semi-righteous state because of what you developed, it's just painful. This is one of the most painful things to ever hear.
Yeah, and again, we're going to look at the 2 Peter kind of note on this in a second about how Lot was tormented. He was tormented day and night by what he was surrounded by. And so it makes me wonder. But yet that account in 2 Peter says that he was righteous. And so we are led to wonder. Yeah.
You know, turning into a pillar of salt, that's heavy.
Yeah.
And that's you know, looking back, that's the drawing of her attention, the drawing of her affection.
Yeah.
What was glimmered in her eye.
Okay. Jim?
Well, I have a happy picture.
Me too.
I think that at that time, the honor that Lot had for his guest was paramount. And I think he would give himself or his sons or his daughters to save his guests. And I think that's part of their culture. That their culture says, when you are a guest of mine, I will do anything to protect my guests above my own family. And I think that's what.
Yeah, you're right about that. That was the culture. That was what was expected of someone who brought someone in under their roof. If they were afforded those kind of protections.
Again, Cynthia's father, Abraham, being raised by Abraham. And the Bible says he's unrighteous. He says he was sitting at the gate. He could have been trying to protect people coming in.
I think that's exactly what he was doing.
Whether he knew they were angels or not, he was trying to protect them from all the temptations and things going on. So I don't see that as.
Well, no, but then, well, yeah, protecting, wanting to protect the men is righteous, but how is offering up your daughters? That's not the same thing. I mean, this is heinous. I mean, to offer up your daughters to be raped. I mean, that's heinous. It's trying to choose the lesser of two evils, and when we were faced with trying to choose the lesser of two evils, what should we do? Find a third option. I mean that's kind of what's in my mind. All right. We got to move on. So the second point that I wanted to look at here is, look, they say to him, you are a sojourner, and you have become the judge. What do you think that they meant by that? You came here to sojourn, and now you have become the judge. And because that's what he says to them. He says, do not act so wickedly. And they respond to that by saying, you're judging us. And I just see that as such a parallel today for the very same kind of behavior in any sinful behavior. People go, when we stand up and we call sin, sin, and that's all we're doing is just saying, no, that is wickedness, then all of a sudden we're the judge. You know, and people get mad that you're judging. And it's like, no, I'm just saying that what you're doing is wickedness. You know, there's nothing hateful about that. I'm just trying to tell you, please don't act like this, because that's going to be damaging to your soul. So please don't act like that. But they're going to turn around on you and say, well, they're going to condemn you for judging. And so it's just amazing to me that nothing changes. Nothing has changed from then until now. Pavel?
I think this guy was not only homosexual. They were also men. How can somebody from them that became a judge? Because all of us homosexual.
Yeah.
Lot is a judge because he's not from homosexual. They are men also. They cannot think logic.
Right. Yeah, and so just the fact that he was different from them, and isn't that how it is today? Just the fact that people, they know what they're doing is wrong, and that's why us being different makes them uncomfortable. And so that's a huge part of it, too. They just know. Okay, Judy?
Some were saying that Lot was sitting outside the gate. Well, when he saw the two men coming, he bowed down to them and he said, come inside my home and I will feed you and wash your feet and then you can rise up. Well, if he knew how sinful Sodom was, I mean, before them, why would he even invite strangers to come in the city? That was my one point. The second point that I have is that the angels told him that they were about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And they told him in the morning, get up and gather your people and leave. But it says Lot hesitated, so they had to grab him and take him out. So I'm not saying he wasn't righteous, but was he not?
What was going on in his mind?
Yeah.
I had been waiting for something to come up.
Okay. All right. So, getting a little ahead of me, but okay.
Sorry. Okay. What was Abraham? Abraham was, he was the forefather, right? And he's the example, you know,
And
how many times did he mess up?
Yeah. Yeah, and we see parallels between Abraham and Lot, as you pointed out earlier. So we see his hospitality here, which is mirrored from Abraham. Look, that's the whole idea, is not just that he's going to invite them in and feed them, but also offer them protection. It's all up in the idea of hospitality here. But it says Lot was sitting in the gate, and the reason that he asked them to come into his house was, well, because he wanted to offer them protection, and his house was in the city. And again, that's kind of where I wanted to go with this, is why was Lot even there? I mean, how did he end up living with a house in the city in the first place?
Well, if he told him that this is a wicked city, don't come here.
And he knew what was going on in the city. Why was he even there? I don't know.
The big mystery about all this is it's never revealed why Lot, who was began with flocks and shows. Without his own, ever moved into there. Because by the time he decided to move into Sodom, he had to know what the place was like.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he did that, and it's not revealed his spot, his wife did. But once he was there, he couldn't deny the situation that it was, and so I see him offering what he did to those strangers coming in.
Yeah. Larry? Or Ben? You had your hand up.
Yeah, well, my point was already brought up, the idea that he fell down. I don't know if that was cultural or the fact that he knew that they were something special.
Yeah, okay. So what I want to point out here is that...
You know, I believe that Lot was setting that for Cain because he knew what was in the fish.
Yeah.
But he also had potential son-in-law who he had evidently saved from that mess. So I think it's kind of like living in your neighborhood. And in the neighborhood, you see those things around you that are wrong. This neighbor is doing that, this neighbor is doing this. You know what they were. Are you going to get up and move? No. You're going to stay in your neighborhood. And you know that sin is around you. But you don't get up and leave. And that's what Lot is doing, I believe. And he saw that there was potential in that city. He had son-in-laws, potential son-in-laws, that I think he has saved from that city. I don't know that. I don't know if they came.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, so when Lot gradually makes his way
but
there.
But he's at the gate because he knows that there are potential people coming by that city, and he is going to either, like you and I would say, hey, don't come in here. But he doesn't say, don't come in here. He says, come to my house. I want to protect you. I see that. He had analyzed that they are righteous.
Right. He offers the logical protection. But I'm just saying, look, whenever he's separated from Abraham, he moves, he sees the well-watered valley, he says, oh, well, I'm going to live out there in the valley with my flocks. But then we find later on that he ends up getting closer to the city because then he gets taken away in chapter 14 and Abraham has to come and rescue him. And then by the time we get here to chapter 19, now he's not just in the valley, not he's just outside the city. Now he's got a house inside the city. So we see how he gradually moves closer and closer. And the parallel I want us to see is that we just need to be very careful about getting close to the line, about getting close and comfortable with sin. Because eventually he gets to the point where he is dwelling in the middle of all of this wickedness. And yes, it tormented him, but he stayed there. And you say, well, are you going to get up and move? Well, yeah, you can. You can get up and move. If you really want to, if you want to separate yourself, you want to separate your family, you want to separate any guests that you might have from that danger, that's exactly what you do. You get up and you leave out of the midst of sin. You don't dwell in the middle of it. You don't touch the fire. You don't touch the hot stove. Well,
because they have a purpose. They're going to spread God's word. They're going to go out and see if they can modify that bad behavior.
And maybe that's what was in his mind. Is I'm going to try and preach to some. As you said, he had sons-in-laws, or that were about to be his sons-in-laws, or they were betrothed. So maybe that was in his mind, trying to save some people.
But
the point is, none of those places you just named today are nearly to the point of 100% wickedness that Sodom was. And so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. Yeah, I mean, look, we can go out today to any name-it place, but none of it is going to be this bad. Okay, Pavel.
If we read two or three chapters before, we can see Abraham have fought for Sodom. Abraham had fought for some emperor who come and take prisoner everything from Sodom. And he fought for Sodom because was his nephew in Sodom.
Yeah.
So Abraham had fought for this conversation and was wrong, even in my opinion. I
think that had more to do with Lot than anything.
And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly thereafter.
All right.
God uses all these things for an example for us to learn from.
Right. Okay, Sam?
This is why God warned his people when they went into the promised land and explained why he ordered them to destroy certain of the peoples there. Because of the very same thing that they would have happened to them that happened to Lot. You get too involved and in juxtaposition of evil, there's too much of a chance you're going to be subverted by it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we'll never know why he left the wealth of that he came into that valley to perpetuate and had all the ideal circumstances to do so. Why he ended up in Sodom, we'll never know. But for whatever reasons, he realized that those two men deserved his protection. And in the righteous man, he was going to offer it. And I believe that's one of the principal reasons God saved his life.
Okay, Carolyn?
I just remember years and years ago, I was around my aunt for a number of days, and she used some unsavory language. And for some reason, in response to her one time, I used some of that language myself. It just kind of came out of my mouth. You know, it was not intentional, and I think the influence.
Yeah, we don't need to kid ourselves. Like, what we are surrounded by is going to influence us. And if we don't think that's the case, then we're naive.
It does say in the New King James Version, it says that he continually was judging them. It wasn't just the one time. Because this man came to sojourn here, but he continued to judge them. So it wasn't just the one time that they thought he was... Like,
he's probably saying.
I'm sure he had been influenced and minimized some of this influence in order to deal with it. That's how we cope with things in the world. A lot of times we minimize it or desensitize ourselves to it. But it still was there. It still had an effect.
Yeah. Okay, Bern. Ultimately destroy you. And so that's what I wanted to focus in on here, is what I've been trying to get us to, is why, what was Lot doing there in the first place? Why didn't he want to leave, and why was he so comfortable there? And, you know, I mean, that's what we really need to think about it. Why was he so comfortable there? Why didn't he want to leave? He had allowed that place to become his home. He had gotten comfortable with it. And that's evident in his wife. Right? Because why did she look back? Why did Lot's wife look back? There was something about it she was going to miss.
Right.
Something about it that she liked. It was her home. And one thing, question number 17 in your workbooks, he asked, because Jesus references this in Luke 17:32. He says, what lessons from Lot's wife did Jesus want us to learn? Anybody answer that question? Okay. Mike?
So that's kind of where I'm at. You can kind of stand in the line with your brother about always feeling like my message, my testimony is going to reach someone that really needs to be reached. I love what he said. However, Jesus' teaching says, go after the weak, the sick, and the maimed. Don't go after the mad, like Paul said. Don't go after the mad and crazy. That's what I wanted to do when I got sober. You know where I wanted to go back to? I wanted to go back to the bars. I was comfortable there. And I was going to save everybody who was in there. I was. Let me tell you what would have happened to me. I would have drank with them, is what I would have done.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done. Because I was really good at that. Sadly, there's something to that.
Yeah. So we got to be. And so what I have down here for that is, look, what Jesus wants us to learn is that, number one, judgment comes quickly. And so we need to flee from sin and don't look back. That's what Jesus wants us to learn.
Also, there's nothing more valuable than precious than selfish than Christ.
Yeah.
And we
need to
have our focus on
that. And ultimately, this all this story is about is our salvation. That's what the story is about. And that's the correlation that Peter makes in 2 Peter chapter 2. He's showing how God continually saves the righteous. Okay? Yes, Pavel?
Maybe somebody think, you know what, Sodom and Gomorrah was 4,000 years ago. And from then, have come out of Christ who teach us about love, about grace, mercy, forgiveness, and so on. So, Sodom and Gomorrah no longer this punishment is applying. I want to tell you a very short story. In 2000, in this area, one airplane came from Hawaii. When it was above the ocean, the airplane started to go down. And the pilot tried to lift up. And was some test, he tried many, many times. And finally, the airplane take almost vertical direction to the ocean. And all was dead. Now, in a short time was an investigation, and they found that was this device, the lift of the airplane, was a big screw, like a 3 feet, and a nut, like a 2 feet. And this nut is from bronze, and this bronze is an alloy of copper and aluminum and beryl and so on. And the maintenance of company have decided they use only one grease for all airplanes. But was a special grease for this one, because they use a grease that was their behavior like a corrosion. So all the thread of these nuts was corroded by the grease and became a bushing. No more thread. And if it's bushing, this device won't work.
Yeah.
For this reason, airplanes go down in the ocean. Now, in short time was publishing the list of those who was in airplane. And in this list, on the top, was 6 couple of homosexual. Pilot was married with flight attendant and so on. 6 couple of homosexual on this 90, almost 90 dead. Also in this list was a preacher, a pastor with 4 children. And all was dead. So, if somebody think, you know what, now we apply love and so on, it's wrong. God punished sin every day. Accidents, illness, fire, everything is in the hand of God.
We never know. I mean, we never know what's going to happen, when we're going to meet our end.
In my opinion, in this airplane, those was 10 righteous men.
But the thing is there that despite what happens in this life, accidents, health issues, or whatever else, in this day and age, what we're looking forward to is the final judgment. In the Christian era, we have to worry about what's going to happen to me, the final judgment when I die. Am I going to heaven or hell? And that's the ultimate punishment that we need to be concerned about. You know, and God is never and that's the point of all of this, is that God is not going to unjustly punish the righteous, and He's going to justly punish the wicked in the final judgment. He's going to send to hell those that deserve to go to hell, and He's going to send to heaven those who have been saved by His Son.
All of these things serve to remind us you must be constantly vigilant. Lot was, shall we say, lacking in the application of that principle in his life. It certainly was true for his wife. And his wife may have had a certain influence and effect upon his life. The thing is that we need to stay as far away from evil as we possibly can in terms of becoming an influence on our life. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And you see that in Lot when the angels tell him, look, we've been sent here to destroy the city. And he goes and he tells his family, get out of this place. You know, lest we be destroyed with it. But then nothing happens. And it seemed to his sons-in-law that he was jesting, it says. And he was just joking. He wasn't serious enough about getting out of there. What he should have done as a father was take them himself by the hand and drag them out of there. And yet, the text says, but he lingered. He didn't want to leave. He wasn't that serious. Maybe he thought he could delay the destruction. I don't know. But for whatever reason, he lingers through the night to the point where finally the angels, they say, look, you've got to go because we can't destroy this place until you leave. They finally grab him themselves by the hand. They drag all of them out of there. And even then, he complains about how far they tell him to go. He doesn't want to go all the way to the hills. He's no, let me go to this other little city over here. And they grant him that favor too. And it's just on and on and on again. We see Lot not wanting to get far enough away from the sin, not wanting to get far enough away from the impending destruction. And this just has to be a lesson for us about how willing we need to be to run away, to run the opposite direction. Because we cannot afford to be swept away with the destruction. Okay, Carol.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think from the beginning it shows that Lot was influenced by the lust of the eyes. Is that true? That Lot was born in that valley was beautiful.
Yeah.
And he wanted it because it was beautiful, not for what it could be.
Yeah. Okay, Mike.
Yeah. As a guy, as a man follower, I've got her soul that God has entrusted me with. I've got Stella, I've got Salem, but the tragedy and the loss of his wife is, I hope it's just ringing in the guy's ears that are in this room. I mean, that is a direct result of a relationship that has been set aside. You know, it really shows that his attention was pulled. It was somewhere else. And it may have been at the gates in order to try to help or control or something. And in the meantime, in that effort, this was lost.
And yeah, and he allowed her also. It's not just that he was comfortable with the city, it was that he seems to have allowed his entire family to become comfortable with
your
the city and what was going on.
Your attention's not there.
Right.
And sometimes we get ourselves in a spot where we're giving too much to something that we can never impact. We can never fully impact.
Yeah. Okay, all right, we're going to stop there, and we'll pick up. I don't know what we're going to do.